Crouch.
Good morning, Your Honors. Breakfast on behalf of Mr. Harris. May it please the Court. We are here on a case which resulted in Mr. Harris being convicted of second-degree murder, use of a weapon, firearms, specifically, in the felony, and possession of a firearm by a prohibited person. Mr. Harris raised numerous issues in his motion before the court. And again, this is on collateral review. This is a post-conviction motion. Of all those issues, I think there's probably a couple we could focus on today, if the court is willing. Perhaps the first, the one I'd like to mention first, first of all, pointing out that the trial court's already found that Mr. Harris received ineffective assistance of counsel. Trial counsel did not interview in particular one critical witness by the name of Betty Woods. There was another witness that was not interviewed that could have also provided some helpful evidence in favor of the defense. That was Mr. Perry. But of the two, I think Ms. Woods is probably more critical. Now, if this court's had a, I'm sure this court's had an opportunity to review all the depositions and everything submitted at the time of the hearing. Really, the only issue as it relates to Ms. Woods is whether the prejudice suffered by Mr. Harris rose to the level that he should receive a new trial. Of course, we argue that it should. Ms. Woods would have testified that she saw a physical altercation occur between Mr. Harris and the alleged victim in this case, Isis Jones, that occurred in the moments, the final moments, just prior to the shooting in this case.
How did she describe that physical altercation?
She described it as a tussle. She used a few different descriptions, actually. She said a tussle, wrestling.
Did she think it seemed serious and aggressive? Is that how she described it?
She did not think it was serious enough at least to stay and watch what happened next because she turned away. So we know that much. She dismissed it in her own mind as some sort of play fight, I think is the word she used.
So why did the district court say there was no prejudice?
That's a good question. The district court essentially said, I think it relied somewhat on the characterizations that we're talking about right here with Your Honor Justice Stacy, but it also looked to other evidence in the record. And I guess what I'd want to point out to Your Honors is that the testimony we lost here as a result of trial counsel's failure to interview Ms. Woods was testimony that would have directly contradicted the statements of not only the three witnesses that were in the vehicle, witnesses that all had an allegiance to Mr. Jones, you know, a girlfriend, a former girlfriend, and a longtime friend.
Weren't two of those witnesses also sisters of his girlfriend?
They were sisters of the girlfriend, and there was at least some evidence introduced that they weren't particularly, they didn't have an allegiance at all to Mr. Harris. They were just sort of acquaintances of his. They were friends with Mr. Jones. Now, this testimony would have flatly contradicted theirs. They said there was nothing. There was no physical altercation, that essentially my client shot this man in cold blood as he stood peacefully with his hands at his sides outside of the gate to Mr. Harris's property. Well, Ms. Woods said she saw a physical altercation taking place inside the gate to Mr. Harris's front yard. And, you know, whether she dismissed it as a play fight or not, in my mind, is not the controlling issue here. The controlling issue is, what did she see? She saw physical engagement between these two men. I do take a little bit of issue with the trial court's finding that she ultimately testified that she saw hand gestures. I don't think that's correct. I think that if you read that in context, she was referring to what did she observe about the communication between the men. She couldn't hear what was being said between them, but she saw hand gestures. I think that's pretty clear from reading her deposition. So I don't think that she ultimately testified that all she saw were hand gestures. She saw physical altercation. So I do take issue with that. The court also relied on the testimony of some other witnesses, including a couple of very young boys, a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old, who said they saw him shoot Mr. Jones after the initial shooting. His testimony was that he came out. Mr. Harris's testimony was he came back out to see if he could find the gun that he thought he saw. And he came out and looked down at the body at that point. And the boys say he shot him again, but then you have another witness that didn't say she's heard any shots at that point. And then the forensic evidence also discounts that testimony because the examiner opined that he would have shot him by from a distance of at least 18,
ask you about that.
Inches. Yeah.
The testimony that there was a final shot or shots when the victim was on the ground and apparently trying to use his cell phone, something like that. Would that be enough for the jury to convict of first degree murder, regardless of what happened initially?
First or second? Second degree murder. Would that in and of itself be enough to convict him of second degree murder? I suppose anything is possible, Your Honor, with the jury. Could they have found that satisfied the elements of second degree murder? I suppose it's possible, but there are a lot of possibilities here, and that's the problem, really, in this case.
Is there a dispute in the testimony of the witnesses who say there was a gap of time? How much time there was?
I would say, I don't think there's too much dispute in that there was a gap. I don't know if the witnesses were very clear on how long that gap was between the initial shooting. Mr. Harris says he shot the man, he went into his house briefly, and then came back out. I don't know if he narrowed down. I'd have to look in the record to see if he narrowed down exactly how long that was.
Was there any significance to the fact that he was shot twice from the front and once from the back?
If you look at his testimony, he said he fired as Mr. Harris or Mr. Jones sort of turns around and exits through that gate.
So he's been shot twice and he's leaving and shoots him again in the back?
Well, at that point, there's a lot of things that could have been happening. I mean, you're in the midst of firing a gun. I mean, it's kind of hard to say whether he, at that point, his intent turned away from self-defense to an intent simply to kill. I mean,
if somebody's leaving you and you shoot them in the back, what danger are you in for self-defense? Why did he have to shoot him in the back?
Well, there wasn't. I'm trying to frame my answer in the context of the evidence, right?
Sure.
And I can't recall that there was any testimony or that either the state or defense counsel asked, because he did testify. Mr. Harris testified. He didn't.
What did he say?
Go so far to explain his thought process at the time, between that second and third shot, why he would have continued shooting. I think that,
would it be consistent with the fact that he shot him twice, went in back into the house, came back out, the guy had reached for his cell phone and rolled over, and he shot him again in the back?
Well, that's the...
That would be consistent with findings, wouldn't it?
That's the testimony of, if you believe the testimony of the two young boys, that there was a third shot that followed.
Well, you lose all inferences there.
But then you have the forensic examiner stating that there's no way that he shot him. It's very unlikely that he shot him from a close distance. And at this point, like I said, there's no power stippling. There's none of that. We had a defense expert testify that
he couldn't. How far away do you have to be, or how close do you have to be before there be stippling and powder marks on the body?
The coroner said 18 to 24 inches at least. Would be the distance.
So he could have stood above him and shot him.
I think what it
being greater than 18 to 24 inches.
Right. I think what it comes down to, Your Honor, on that aspect of it is was there enough here, enough doubt raised by the testimony that we would have introduced through Ms. Woods to say that we have, it's not undermining our confidence, our confidence.
Well, what was her testimony? A blue van pulled up blocking Michael Gray's car. After I got into the house, I looked out the window of my front door to see Michael and a guy tussling. They started tussling, and the guy was on the ground. Is that her testimony?
I'm sorry, whose testimony were you reading? That was from Ms. Woods?
Yes.
Okay, so what she said was, yeah, she came back to the window at some point, and she did see the guy on the ground.
She saw him.
She didn't see him come back out and shoot him or anything.
Talking,
like
that. And they started tussling, and the guy was and the guy was on the ground.
Right. There are some other key points of those state's witnesses' testimony that were contradicted by what Ms. Woods would have testified to.
But she saw no shooting then.
Right. She turned away from her window at the time. She dismissed it as a play fight, which, if you read it in the context of Mr. Harris's testimony, there was a brief sort of pushing match as Mr. Jones is pushing his way into Mr. Harris's yard. And then immediately upon that, Mr. Harris is pushed into a fence. There's, continuing argument between the men. He tells him to leave, and that's when Mr. Harris...
Is there any significance that there wasn't any gun found?
Right, correct. There was no gun found, but, it's...
How would a guy be in fear of his life then if he claimed it was self-defense because he was reaching for a gun and you don't ever find anything that resembles a gun?
Well, cell phone was testified to that there was a cell phone.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's quite possible that that's what he saw.
Okay.
The only other thing, Your Honors, I'm out of time, so I guess I'll let that one go.
You may complete your thought.
Okay, thank you. The other big issue that I'm hoping the court will at least consider here, since this is a murder case and we have the rule from Smith and Trice that has come down in the last several years from this court, we believe it would be logically inconsistent for this court to apply the rule from Burleson, in which this court determined that malice is not a necessary element of second-degree murder, retroactively to that defendant's case, which was on collateral review, but not apply the rule from Smith and Trice. There's two cases that are essentially the basis for this rule regarding the interplay between second-degree murder and manslaughter. And not apply that rule retroactively to Mr. Harris's case. The reason I say that is because...
What problem are you addressing?
That'd be the jury instruction in the current case. Now, there was an objection by the state to the argument in our reply brief. I think the exception to the rule that the state cites in favor of their objection that plain error can be noticed by this court and corrected at any time. I just wanted to be clear too, while I was here, that there was no intentional gamesmanship here and not specifically arguing that portion of our argument in the opening brief. I want to make that clear to the court, and that's why in our response I made it clear that we'd have no objection to the state being offered an opportunity to brief that in a supplemental brief or whatever the court would deem appropriate. But It's plain error according to Trice. The same instruction. So, if it's plain error, to just simply let it slide, that would have been an abdication of my duties, not to raise it when I saw it. And I'd argue that if the court doesn't...
To raise it when Trice came out? Or within a year of Trice?
Right, so, yeah, you're saying he should have raised it in his post-conviction within a year of Trice being.
I'm throwing that out as a question.
I know, and I'm clarifying, and I want to make sure I answer it appropriately. I believe what you have here is, again, the standard for plain error is simply that the court sees an injustice, something that we already called in Trice an injustice. And something that, if allowed to stand, would be inconsistent with its prior, like I said, logic that was applied in Burleson. That case benefited the state. In that case, it reversed a decision that was favorable.
So the claim of self-defense is consistent with provocation.
Well, the jury never had a chance to consider whether whether there was an intentional sudden quarrel killing here. And that's the issue. So I've been out of time for a while. I apologize for going so far over. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Tangeman, good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. I will just briefly discuss the sudden quarrel issue that Appellant's counsel ended with. This court explicitly stated in State v. William Smith that State v. Ronald Smith, which is the first case to change the sudden quarrel issue that we're talking about, did not announce a new constitutional rule. It has to be a constitutional rule when we're talking about post-conviction, and so therefore there's no merit to that claim. The Court of Appeals found as such in a 2014 case, State v. Hill, which is 814-233. The petition for further review was denied by this court, and I've also had a motion for summary affirmance sustained in State v. Under Collins' successive post-conviction case in 2015 on the sudden quarrel being a new constitutional rule. Having said that, I will begin by addressing Harris's claim that his trial counsel's failure to call Betty Woods was prejudicial. The state believes that the district court was correct in finding that it was not. To begin with, the helpfulness of Woods' testimony is questionable. Harris testified that there was one physical altercation with Jones in his yard near his house. Specifically, he claimed that Jones shoved him in the face, which immediately caused him to fall back into the gate. Woods did not see this altercation. Instead, she claims that she saw Harris and Jones wrestling or tussling, but Harris did not testify that there was any type of wrestling or mutual fighting that occurred, which calls into what Woods actually saw. Furthermore, she was potentially damaging to Harris because she didn't see anything in the victim's hand, while Harris testified that the victim had what looked like a gun in his hand. If Woods would have testified to such a trial, she could have potentially discredited Harris's own testimony. In addition, Harris cannot establish a reasonable probability of acquittal based on the eyewitness's testimony at trial. This includes testimony of 2 7-year-old boys who saw Harris fire an additional shot at Jones after he had already been shot and lying on the ground. Their testimony was corroborated by Harris's neighbor, who saw Harris point a gun down at Jones while he was lying on the ground. The 3 women who arrived after Jones all testified that Jones did not have anything in his hand when he was shot, and the 2 7-year-old boys also testified that Jones only pulled his cell phone out of his pocket after he was lying down on the ground and had been shot. These accounts of those 5 witnesses directly contradict the defendant's testimony. His actions after the shooting, the wiping off of the gun, the fleeing the scene, and disposing of the gun was the most damaging circumstantial evidence against him. In addition, the physical evidence demonstrated his guilt. Jones was shot in the back.
Well, let me stop you on one question. He supposedly comes out of the house, and he's wiping off the gun.
Yes.
Then he shoots him again.
I believe
that's
the
testimony. Does he have to wipe it off again, doesn't he?
Well, he disposed of it after that, so I don't know if he didn't know at the time what he was going to do with it. He decided to go back, last second thought. I don't
know. Well, he went back and the guy's still alive, so he shot him.
Yeah. And that's at the time that the victim had his cell phone out and was allegedly trying to get help. And one last additional piece of evidence is that the 3 shell casings were found in the location that the 3 women and the 2 boys testified that the shooting had actually occurred, and not the area that the defendant said the shooting did occur. Based on all of that...
So is there an inference then that after he was shot, he didn't move anywhere?
Yeah, the...
He didn't travel toward the gate. He was still in the same proximity of where the 2 shots were initially fired.
Correct.
And then the 3rd shot was fired in the same place.
Correct.
Same area.
Yes, he basically stumbled back onto the car after the 1st shot and then fell to the ground after the 2nd shot. And then the 3rd was after he was on the ground. Based on that evidence, the state believes that the district court was correct in finding that Harris cannot establish a reasonable probability that he would have been acquitted but for counsel's failure to call Woods to testify at trial.
Is there evidence that supports that the 1st 2 shots were in the front? He was facing the defendant, and the 3rd shot, he was not facing the defendant?
the path of a bullet, potentially. I mean, they entered, but I don't know that the pathologist could really tell much.
Which shot was fired first.
Right. The only other thing I would like to discuss is regarding the appellant's fifth and sixth assignments of error, along with the new merits claim raised in his reply brief. The appellant is trying to undermine and avoid this court's procedural bar rules by asserting plain error for claims not properly raised either in direct, on direct appeal or in this original brief to this court. As this court recently stated, plain error is not a vehicle that should be routinely used to save an issue that could have been previously raised, and the state requests that this court decline to address the merits of those claims. And I have no intention to discuss the remaining assignments of error unless there are any specific questions. This court. We ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you. Is there time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Thank you. And we'll go on to the next case of the day, which is A-Line Bay Tanning versus Department of Revenue. I hope I pronounced that name correctly. And that is combined for argument with J.B. and Associates, Inc. versus Department of Revenue. Justice Stacy is recused from this matter. Judge Irwin from the Court of Appeals will join the court momentarily, and when he does, we will begin arguments, Mr. Gross, so kindly be patient.